When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, this is Anthony.
And this is episode 494, our top 100 games of all time, number 70 to number 61. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. All right, we're back. And once again, we're taking a look at our top 100 games of all time. It's a special list. Because it's leading us up to our 500th episode, Anthony.
Yeah, we're almost there. We got five more weeks. Math is hard, but it's coming up soon.
It's a thing. It's happening.
Yeah. November. Mark it on your calendars. Nothing else is happening in November. So just listen for our 500th episode.
It's going to be a big episode. I mean, I think when you listen to podcasts in tabletop gaming, you listen to their episode 100. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's just like, maybe like their 500th, right? Because, and then what, 1,000, right, at that point?
Oh, yeah, all those people with 1,000 episodes. 20 years of podcasting.
I like board games that used to have cardboard in it. Now it's all plutonium based. Come on, guys. Can't we get back to some cardboard in our board games?
We're getting there, right?
At some point.
Yeah.
We'll have some unobtainium. In our board games.
Right.
We'll have real spurium in our board games.
Ooh, I'll buy all of them.
Daddy, why does our board game glow?
Because it's the best game.
Don't worry, kids. It's good for you. I'm sure it's good for you. It says ages 12 and up. I'm sure. It's fine.
Right, yeah. Somebody has decided this is not going to hurt you, and I am keen to believe them.
Well, you know, it's they used to have glassware out there. That was radioactive, right?
Yeah, there's been a lot of things that would kill you.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. I think there was a board game that had some small element. I don't know if it was plutonium or like some small radioactive element that you could buy, like way back in the day. Like we're talking 1950s or so.
Where they thought, like, yeah.
You know, like stuff that would radiate kids and like, hey, kids, we're getting radiated this week. Yay!
Woo! Games are fun.
Yeah. It's gonna be a thing at some point, like especially with all the Kickstarters and things out there now are crowdfunding. They're like, yeah, the deluxe game with the plastic resin components and the real wood pieces is good, but I do want my radioactive gems to really be radioactive. What's the pledge level for that? And you'll know they'll have it. It'll be a thing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And they will sell out of that pledge level, and then everybody will want them to run a second campaign, and yeah.
There's going to be at least a point where they do have precious stones in a board game, right? That's going to happen if it hasn't happened already.
Oh, yeah. I'd be surprised if it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I think way back in the day, they used to have Franklin Mint, and they used to have, like, Monopoly and Clue and Scrabble, and they used to have, was it gold-plated pieces?
Right, yeah. That sounds right.
And it was really crazy prices, but now it's not crazy. You should have bought them back then.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, who would have thought people would collect Monopoly of all things? But people collect everything.
So. Gold plated, man.
Gold plated Monopoly. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. If you took any game and you transformed it into like a real life counterpart where it had the actual components, again, keeping in mind a lot of these games are fantasy and sci-fi, but some of those games actually have real resources. So
yeah, right.
Jeez, that's kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Just like have a copy of like Zulkin that's worth $50,000 because like, this is real gold and this is a real crystal skull.
And it comes with corn.
Corn, like, yeah.
A lot of maize. There's a lot of maize in that game.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's done it. I'm sure, you know.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, if you, yeah. the possibilities are endless and disturbing. All right, Anthony. So, with all of that said, let's talk about wonderful and disturbing. Again, thank you all for responding to our call to action. Our YouTube channel is up to 903 subscribers at the current point. Not the 10 to 12,000 people who are listening right now, depending on when you're listening, but super, super appreciated. We upped our thank you, and we're going to up it one more time. But the more we up it, the smaller the game gets, honestly, just because of the cost of things. So, we're still looking to hit 1,000. We do have a reason for that, but that reason is episode 500, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So at this point, we'll do 100. If we hit 1,000 by episode 500, we'll do 1,000. So if you haven't done it already, it's a good opportunity to do so, and we'll give you more details as time goes on. But again, if you already have, thank you so much for subscribing. Also, check our reviews here. Over time, not the nicest people have said not the nicest things because we've been really forwarding the idea of like welcoming everyone to the table. So you might want to check out some of those fun reviews on your different podcast feeds and maybe add your own voices to it to kind of support the great stuff that's going out there, especially providing everybody with accessibility at the table. We want to include everyone possible. Sometimes that bothers people, but really, we want everyone there. So hit us up on the reviews, hit us up on all the social medias. And, you know, you can always just send us an old fashioned email. That's still a thing, Anthony. Did you know that?
I know. Yeah. Hit us up, Anthony or Chris at BoardGamersAnonymous.com. One of us will answer you.
That's true. And always our website, BoardGamersAnonymous.com. And if you're also interested in the academic stuff, Anthony recently supercharged that website. BoardGameAcademics.com, where you can find out a whole bunch of fun stuff there.
Yeah, BoardGameAcademics.com. We have all of our articles published in issue one of the journal, as well as for the academics out there, we've uploaded all of the relevant bibliographical information, as well as DOI numbers are all available now as well for citations. And all the videos from the presentations from both years are available. So you can check out everything that's been produced so far. We are currently working on the written publication for issue 2, so that'll be up there in the spring. But everything that has been produced so far by us or by the authors who have contributed to the journal, it's all up there on the website right now.
Excellent. You know, I was playing Andromeda's Edge recently with a new friend, a friend Joe. He's from up in New Jersey, and he was mentioning he started listening to the podcast, and he was saying that he didn't realize how large of a tabletop community there is out there, especially within our podcasts. And I think typically we don't think about that because a lot of us are scattered throughout the world in different types of situations. We don't always get together with as many people as we'd want. And obviously we don't realize the tens of thousands of people who are getting great games to the table, listening to great tabletop content. And it's a good reminder. It reminded me that I want to remind you all out there that there is such a wonderful, warm, supportive community out there that just wants to get some games to the table with you. Mm-hmm. And even if it's through this podcast, you're listening along with so many other people out there right now enjoying talking about tabletop gaming and all the fun that comes along with it. So whatever's happening in your life, whatever's happening in the world, you are part of a bigger community out there, and you're all listening right at this moment, no matter where that is, and no matter when this moment takes place. So
Stay connected. Connect with each other on all the social media platforms for Board Gamers Anonymous, Board Game Academics, and, you know, stay in touch. All right, Anthony, with that said, let's get into the top 100 here. So why don't you start us off with your number 70?
Number 70. We're getting into it. This is happening.
It's getting heavy on here.
Getting real. It's getting real. I got a nice spread this week. It's over a good like 10, 15.
Oh, that's
years.
Good. So what is the vibe for your 10
yeah,
here?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a vibe?
We have a vibe.
You got a vibe, man?
I don't think I do, actually. It's pretty random this week.
No vibe.
Yeah, do you have a vibe?
Let me see. Do I have a vibe? I will admit, last week was a vibe. This week is kind of all over the place. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's got, I guess maybe almost a summery vibe.
Summery vibe.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few games in here that kind of fit that.
Yeah, mine is kind of big and small at the same time. We're not talking small box games at this point. We're hitting like medium boxes. I guess I'm gonna go. We're looking at like mid games, and not mid in a bad way. I think they're just like, these are stuff that, like, weirdly enough, kind of plays well as far as like at that mid level, like not too heavy, not too light, like just solid in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I don't think I have any like super crazy heavy stuff here this week either.
All right.
For us, at least.
That's
I don't know.
True.
Some people might disagree, but like, that game is hard. All right. So I'm going to kick it off then with number 70. This is a game that came out back in 2015. And I still have my original copy of this because I really don't like the new version. And that is Council of Four. So this is a game that came from Cranio Creations back in, like I said, 2015. And it was designed by Simone Luciani and Daniela Ticini.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're on this list a few times. I got my Rosenbergs and I got my Lucianis and Ticinis. Mm-hmm. So they each have, we'll have to do a tally at the end. Which designer or designer combo has the most?
That's true.
So this is a game that has a Ticket to Ride style mechanic where you are pulling cards kind of from a central display, and then you are playing them with matching colors based on the counselors that are in these different trays. And then the trays correspond to different parts of the map, and based on where you place the or what cards you play and what who's currently in that tray. So you're not just playing like five red to play five things out. You're matching up with the counselors that are there. So if there's like a white, a blue, and a black, then you want to have that combination or some wilds thrown in there to reach that combination. Then you place stuff out onto the map. When you place something on the map, you're going to activate the location that you place it on. You're also going to activate anything else that is in that network. So you want to try to network everything together while also completing different objectives on the map. So there's... The game is the most fun when you're able to build like a single continuous long network in a way that lets you generate and to complete these different objectives and also get the bonuses multiple times because you activate every single thing in that network each time. So if the first one you place is, you know, you're going for, you know, it gives you additional cards or different additional actions or different additional points, you're going to get that a bunch more times. So I really enjoy it. It feels like an engine builder where the engine's on the map. So everybody can kind of see it and work with it together. And it's, you know, you're racing to get those locations first because the more people who are on them, the more expensive they are to build there. So I've always really enjoyed this. The original version of it is kind of a bland looking Euro, but it's got some charm to it. The newer version that Simon did is just like so overproduced. Everything is miniatures instead of meeples. It's everywhere. It's plastic everywhere. The artwork's kind of ugly on top of that. I just really, really dislike the new production of the game.
That's funny.
I don't know if you can find the older production or if you even want to, but the game is relatively inexpensive either way. They overproduced it. So Council of Four, it's fantastic. It's quick too. It's like an hour long. So I can teach this game in 5 minutes, especially with people who've played any kind of medium weight Euros before. It's got a lot of familiar mechanics. The one thing I will say, though, is if your placements aren't quite right, or if you don't build from a network, or if you get cut off multiple times, I've played this game a couple times where people score like 12 points and they had a bad time.
Oh, no.
So It is possible to have a bad time. I've never had a bad time, but first play or first couple plays, it's you got to coach people through it. So don't, despite its simplicity, you can't just be like, figure it out. Oh, that was bad for you. Sorry. Yeah, Council of Four.
I own this. I don't know which version I own. I have to now you got me scared. I have to go take a look at this.
Yeah, the CMON is square and big. The Cranio is like the tall box and smaller.
Gotcha. Yeah, this is in my collection. For some reason, I have not played it. And I don't know why. Maybe, like you said, maybe it's one of those things where like we had talked about it and you were like, you have to know certain things, and I just kind of put it on the shelf.
It's a weird one. It's not complicated at all, but if you don't really have a sense of the combos that could come out, or like what's valuable for what, like when you're teaching the game, you really have to tell people like, this location is good because of X. These locations are good because of Y. Look at the color coding on the map. It matches with the letters. That's what you're trying to complete to get this objective. This type of terrain is important for this. Like, there's different combinations of things that you can try to complete. Like, if you get all of the purple cities, you get a bonus, but they're not all together. They're spread across the map. So you need to know that and be able to look at it and see where you're trying to go. Otherwise, you're like, I'll go here. That's cool. And now we'll go over here. That's cool. And the second somebody does that, I'm like, you don't want to do that. You have now started two separate networks in different types of cities. It's going to be a bad go for you. So that it's a coaching issue for sure. But it's also a short game. So like, even if you have that kind of a bad play, it's not 4 hours long.
Sure. And like you said, the artwork here is, and I remember this period for CMON, a lot of games produced around this time, their artistic direction was this kind of like bombastic, like someone else produced this, but we can make it like plastic and look a little more crazy, like just bouncing
it's
off the box.
So bad. I hate it so much. So bad.
Wow. All right. Well, let me talk to you about a very good production of a game that unfortunately you can't pick up anymore, but maybe some point. Days of Wonder. And Days of Wonder always does a fantastic job on their productions, especially way back in the day of 2005. This is Shadows Over Camelot.
Ooh.
Camelot, Anthony. Camelot.
Yes. That's so silly.
It's a silly place.
Yeah.
So Shadows of Camelot is a very interesting game. First off, since Anthony mentioned the other side, the production is gorgeous. I mean, so much about this game, the draw of this game is they do such a wonderful job with depicting Arthurian legend, the artwork, the graphic design, the production here. This is also a Bruno Cathala game, so not too surprised here as far as like good production and good design throughout. And this is one of, again, depending on who you're talking to and when you've played this, it's one of the best for me of that kind of hidden traitor mechanics. So it's a cooperative, semi-cooperative hand management game with some deduction elements to it. And obviously, the more players you play, the more interesting it is because the traitor has more of a dynamic role. And you can have multiple traders. The expansion, the Merlin expansion, makes the game even better because there's another area to kind of manage. And basically, you're a part of the Arthurian legend. You're one of these wonderful knights. And there's a great player card with a lot of detail. And you are trying to work alongside of your fellow knights to be able to fight back the hordes, quest for the Holy Grail, and do a lot of other kind of medieval kind of fun stuff things. But if obviously you're being given the traitor card, you are going to try to sabotage that throughout. Everyone else is trying to find out who the traitor is, and it gives you a really good opportunity to, play well, but also kind of like steer things if you're the traitor. And again, if you're not, then you obviously have some things to do above and beyond the game itself. This element obviously is the element that plays into and is utilized by Battlestar Galactica, the board game, which is so fantastic and phenomenal as far as the game. This is obviously on my list as well. Talked about it before. Shadow Camelot doesn't have the big overarching production with the multiple expansions and stuff like that, but it does have a beautiful production, a good gateway feel. You still have to be a gamer, but it's still a gamer gateway kind of feel to the game, and it's just one of the greatest games out there from that age. Days of Wonder just knocked those games out of the park each and every year. That's Shadows Over Camelot.
This is such a cool looking game, and it's one that I've never had a chance to play because it's been out of print since I knew it existed, and it just has not showed up at the table at a game. It's one of those games that if I saw it set up, I would like, I want to play that. I'm not even a big like Hidden Role, you know, trader type of game, but when they're really good, they're really good. Like, I love Battlestar Galactica. So it's every time you bring it up, I'm like, man, I want to play that.
We'll have to play it. I got to copy.
Play that. Yeah. Get a group together. Let's do it.
Yeah, you need a group. That's the thing. You do need a group for it.
All right. Next up for me is number 69 on my list, Azul Summer Pavilion. So there's obviously a lot of Azul games, and it's a brilliant formula. So like, if this one didn't exist, I would probably put a different one on the list. This isn't like, I like this one and don't like the others. It's, I like Azul a lot, and this is the best version of it for me. So Azul, as an abstract game, it's one of my favorites because it's so interactive and it works with multiple players, right? Most interactive abstract games are two-player only. And then when they try to be four players, it doesn't really work. It becomes kind of a mess. This one's really interesting because of the draft mechanic when you're pulling things from the central board. And two players is really brutal because you can take whatever the other person wants, right? The puzzly nature of it, when you're trying to build up, you know, the different tiles that you need and how you're going to lay them out and where they're going to go, that it just feels good. And the more you know the game, the more you've played it, the faster you can play, right? I can play a game of Azul Summer Pavilion with my daughter, she's 9, in like 20 minutes at this point. Because we both just know what we want, we get it, we put it down. The scoring probably takes the longest, but even that kind of just, it flows once you know the game really well. Now, the reason I like Summer Pavilion so much is it has those like little star elements to it. And you're placing the different tiles based on the number of tiles that you have to place. But you have like the wild center, and you also have all the different bonus actions that you can get based on your locations that you place them, right? So you're getting additional points based on filling in certain numbers, certain stars, and like how you surround the windows, the statues, and the fountains. It creates just a lot of different paths you can go. So you're never really stuck as much as on like Base Azul, where sometimes you're like, I have all these tiles, I can't really place them anywhere because there's nowhere for me to do that, right? Based on how my grid is filled out. This doesn't really put you in that position as much. Now, it makes the game a little looser, and then the tightness comes down to the scoring, because you could play this version of the game, never get stuck, never lose any points for having extra tiles, but not score very well because you've kind of spread out everywhere. Like, you really want them to clump together to get the most points. You could also just put them down in the wrong order and kind of, you know, which is the same in Azul, but it's much more so here. But this is my favorite because of that. Like, I can be a little more strategic. I can think a little bit more. I can see my daughter trying to do the same thing. We can all play together, though. Someone new could come in, and the game's not that complicated. Summer Pavilion of Azul is my favorite of the four, I think there are two, that have been released. And it's, I still own the base game. I got rid of a couple of the other ones. And this is the one that's on the main shelf in the living room.
That's great.
Most as a family.
Well, it's pretty high praise. I know you're a big fan of the abstract games, and Azul, I mean, Azul, the original Azul is great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Stained Glass has been my favorite. I did play this one. I don't remember it. I think I might have only played it once or like three quarters of a game.
Right.
So I can't speak to the game itself, but it was quite some time ago. But again, considering that this is the third of four or five in the whole collection.
Right.
It's pretty high praise to say that this is the best of them.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Like, Azul came out, I got it, loved it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite games. Stained Glass came out, and I was like, it's better than the base game. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, like, we stumbled across it at PAX one day. I was there with my family, and this is the version they had. I'm like, oh, Azul. You'd all like Azul. This is easy to teach. Oh, let's grab this. We took it from the library. I taught it. And then my daughter's like, this is great. Well, let's play it more. And I'm like, oh, I have it at home. So we've played it more, and having played this more along with the other two, I was like, this is, I think, just the most complete of the three. And I honestly have never really played the Queen's Garden version, because at that point I'm like, I have three, I'm good. So
as far as it goes, people.
Yeah. No more Azul. But yeah, Summer Pavilion, fantastic. Great. My number 69 game.
All right, my number 69 game from 2010. One of my favorites, I know a little challenging for Anthony here, is Fresco.
Yeah.
Anthony does not like sleeping in late. He doesn't like the play order, so to speak. So if you know Fresco, one of the big elements of Fresco is that I do find very interesting is you kind of like, you get to jockey for play order, and depending on what play order you get, obviously the earlier you send out your assistants to go to the different markets, the less benefits that they have, because what's not available, what's not open at that point, but you do get the first choice. You go a little bit later, you get more stuff, and that's fine. What's really most interesting about this game, and I have the big box version of this, not the newest version. They re-kickstarted it at some point with like super crazy, you know, extras, you know, go along with it. I have the gigantic box. I can't do it again. but the game is great, right? So you're a master painter here, and your job is to add to this beautiful work of art. And again, depending on the version that you have, obviously different masterwork paintings here in this fresco in this Renaissance church. So what I enjoy about it very much is like, it's all on the board itself. You are collecting paint. You are working with different patrons. You're jockeying for special abilities throughout. And basically you're trying to add, as everyone is trying to add to this large fresco. So the game starts off with, these are the paints that are required for each section of the board, along with the victory points you get from it. And as the game goes on and game finally finishes, the fresco is completed. You, along with everybody else in a competitive game, have created a work of art. And then obviously you see, as far as point scoring is along, like who created the most of that wonderful work of art. So visually very stunning, an interesting concept as far as gameplay is concerned. And there's infinite numbers of queenies. I can't speak to all the different versions of it because, again, I didn't get the super duper deluxe. I would love to have that, but I already have the big box with a lot of the queenies in it. Some of them add like 5 minutes to the game. They're good, they're bad, they're in between, but base game with maybe a queenie or two, and I think you're good. So that is Fresco.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. No, I'm just fine. Kidding. I played it once or twice, like at this point, maybe 10 years ago.
Sure.
So I honestly can't even tell you why I didn't like it anymore. It's very pretty. I always wanted to like the game because it's just such a beautiful thing to look at. And it's a great theme that you don't really see a lot.
It's like, yeah, agreed.
Yeah, it's such any a game with an artistic theme. I want more of that. So
it's such an interesting just general concept, right? That they put the fresco in there. And like, as you, mm-hmm. as you paint the requirement tiles, they flip over and make part of the fresco.
Yeah.
So I think that's very smart.
Yeah, no, it's really pretty. All right. Next up for me, number 68 is a relatively new game. Just came out last fall. Both you and I reviewed it separately, I think, and gave mm-hmm. it a buy.
Yeah.
That's Barcelona.
Barcelona. So
this
yeah.
is from first time designer at the time, Danny Garcia. And Garcia's games, by the way, we're not reviewing anything here on the podcast for a few more weeks, but I recently played her newest game, Windmill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Also very good.
Whoa,
so
very nice.
Very surprised. Not surprised. This is such a good game. But it's just cool to see, like, didn't just have like that one game. And I'm like, no, good design sense, good clear idea of like how to make things interesting.
I'm very excited to play that myself too.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So this game in particular, it is a game in which you are building up the city of Barcelona, which famously has all these red houses kind of in these district rows throughout the city. And there are like a million different things you can do at any point in time. But what you're going to do is take one of your tiles, you're going to place it into an intersection, and then that'll determine your houses that are available to you. And if you happen to place it in a way that completes a pattern around one of the intersections, you're also going to build there. That's mandatory, which I find such a cool, interesting mechanic, because you can not want to sometimes for whatever reason. Maybe you're like trying to build it up a little bit so you can like put a more powerful one there, or you don't want the specific one that you're going to put there because there's like a benefit and a detriment in building that. But you don't always have a choice. So I like that the game kind of forces you into that. I also like the sheer number of different types of actions that are available and how complex and interesting your turns can become based on how they kind of chain together. right? It's not just like, I'm doing this action this round. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to build roads and I'm going to move the tram. And then that allows me to do this. And I'm going to pick up these coins. And then I'm going to get this other bonus over here. And now I'm building in the cathedral. And oh, this thing happened where because I placed this tile, now this track built out. So that triggers the scoring. Now we're going to do that. It's just fun when you have those turns where you're like, 5 minutes later, you're like, whose turn is it? What's going on? And I know that drives some people crazy, but that's like my favorite type of game. When it's all balanced and when it all kind of flows in the right direction where you feel like you're building towards something.
Yes.
And this game definitely feels like you're building towards something because you are literally physically building towards something at all times. Like your personal player board's building up. The main mat is building up. It's just a great experience all around. So it's like the first time I played it, I was like, oh, that was good. And then the next time I played it, I'm like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And then a couple more plays, I'm like, this is like an all-timer. This is such a good game. And it's just, I don't want to say elegant because there are a lot of things to keep track of.
Yeah.
But once you get all those things in your head and all the iconography makes sense because it's all in context of the action you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It feels almost like a lighter version of a Lacerda game
because
everything you're doing makes sense in the context of the theme of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just so hard to do, I think, in building a Euro game. And the designer does it so well here. So Barcelona, good stuff.
I have a lot to say about that. But I will save that for a later episode.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
All right. So my number 68 is a little bit of a throwback from 2014. This is Rivet Wars Eastern Front. So Rivet Wars is a miniature game, and you probably know it best because it has these little cute little chibi miniatures that are fighting a World War One like steampunk battle of two players. And I remember way back when this came out in 2014 and seeing the board game magazine kind of layout for it. And this back then when they had a lot of board game magazines,
right?
And just a beautiful paint job on these little miniatures. And it kind of really, it's very closely aligned with Memoir 44, but it's got a lot of more flavor to it. It's got a lot more personality to it. It's cutesy. You don't feel bad about like the actual figures getting knocked out through the game. And it has a really smart, innovative kind of plug mechanic. So the rivets really play into the actual gameplay because it allows you to upgrade particular troops, put heroes into play, put special weapons into play. And so it has a lot of crunch as far as being a war game, and it's fun and engaging enough that it brings non-war gamers to the table, very much like WMR 44. I historically have had both of these games on my list. Over time, Rivet Wars kind of won out just because I think it plays with a wider group of players at the table. And that's something that's important when you need to get games to the table. They have a new version of this that was crowdfunded with a new rule book and new everything new. I don't have that version, so I can't speak to it. I'm sure it's better than the version I have, but this is the version I have. And I've always enjoyed it. Rivet Wars on the Eastern Front.
Yeah, this game is so cool. And I think the main thing I like about it, other than everything you said, because functionally, like the gameplay mechanics are very good.
Yeah.
But like, I like war games. I like having the one-on-one. I like having that tension and the strategy of it. I don't like historical war games.
Sure.
Much. Like, especially like 20th century, somebody has to play a Nazi. Like,
I know.
I don't want to play Nazis. I don't want to play against Nazis. I don't want to make my friend play a Nazi. Like, so having a game like this where like, it's fantasy, but you get the 20th century technology and the tropes. And yeah, there are guys who are like, quote unquote, bad, but they're not Nazis.
That's right.
Like, there are games I've played some over the years where I'm like, this is great. This is a fantastic game. I don't want to play it ever again. I don't enjoy playing as a Nazi, or I don't want to be in that space. So this is great. I love the fantasy version of it. I love the way it does it. It's just very cute.
Very much so.
All right. Next up for me, number 67, is Fantasy Realms. This originally came out back in 2017, but I think generally most people have engaged with it in the last 3 years since the WizKids release. It is a very simple game and idea. We've played it a lot recently at conventions and events because of how simple it is. You have a hand of cards that you start with, and on your turn, you will draw a card and you will play a card. The card you've drawn to your hand can come from the tableau in the center, or it can come from the deck, and then you place one of those cards back into the tableau in the center. Once the tableau in the center has enough cards in it, you end the game, and you score what's in your hand. Every card in your hand has some kind of ability, elements, something that interacts with other cards that you could potentially have in your hand, right? So you might have a card that says, you know, plus 15 with any one wizard. So you want to make sure you have one wizard in your hand. Otherwise, that card is not worth that plus 15. It's only worth like the base 8, the bell tower. Others get more complicated, right? Like you have the unicorn, which is you get a bonus with the princess, or only about like a smaller bonus with the empress or the queen. Or the princess, you get bonuses for having armies and wizards and other leaders. And so you start building these out. And then occasionally, not even occasionally, like half the cards in the deck might be like, you don't get any points for this, right? Like if you have armies, they're all worth -5. You also have those cards that are worth very little, but that you could shoot the moon with, like the candle. You get a 100-point bonus if you have the Book of Changes, the bell tower, and a wizard. I pulled that off once. I was very excited about it. So the game itself is, it's really just about like manipulating the cards in your hand and trying to get the best possible combo with what comes out, right? You can't go through the deck and choose what you want. The one card you're waiting for could be in someone else's hand and they never play it. And that just is what it is. Game is fantastic. It's very quick. If you get the app, that'll score it for you.
Crazy.
It'll scan all the cards in your hand and tell you what your score is. It takes away the one annoying part of the game, which is scoring, and voila. It's great. So this is like, I think right now, my favorite filler-ish game. And I don't mean filler in a bad way. I just mean, we've got a few people sitting here. We're waiting to go to lunch, or waiting for somebody to join us. We're going to play a bigger game in a few minutes, or we're going to split up. Let's play Fantasy Realms. And it's really, over the last year or so, kicked in as one of my favorite games. It does that kind of thing. So it's great.
Yeah, I think this is one of those games that I remember when you're like, hey, here, you should play this. You should review this game. And I'm like, yeah, it's a small box game, generic kind of title, super generic title.
So generic.
Super generic king on the cover, and the back of it is just like, oh, it's cards. All right. And then like you play cards and you have a hand of cards and then you score points. I'm just like, dear God, like why? Like this is like almost a joke. Yeah. And then you play the game, or actually, let me take a step back. Like, you explain the rules to someone, and you still feel like it's a joke, right? Like, yeah. There's a gag here. Like, you're going to get 7 cards in your hand. Like, uh-huh. And then, like, you're going to take a card and discard a card. You're like, uh-huh. And at the end of the game, you still have 7 cards in your hand, and that's your hand. And you're like, huh? And then you're like, that, no, why? That's not a game. Like, that's a game that people make when they're making fun of people who play games.
Right. It's exactly what it feels like. You teach this game and someone's like, the look on their face every time. Because I remember teaching, it was like you and Derek and Will and me, like, oh, after dinner, like, we're going to play this game. Here's how it plays. And at least 2 of you were like looking at me like, what are we doing? Like, you'll see. It's fine. It'll happen. It'll just happen. And the game's 5 minutes long. So if we don't get it, we'll do it again. Sure. So.
And you get a hand of cards and like, you feel like a crazy person because all the cards are like, hey, I'm really important if you have another card or you have a thing. And you're like, I don't know what that other thing is. Like, but the card insists that that other card exists if you can get it. And then, but like when you first play it, at the first moment, like you gasp because you're just like, this is just not going to work. And then like over time, you're like, okay, I just need to make the best hand possible.
Yeah.
So some of that's what I got. So maybe I can't alter it crazy, but like I can better this.
Yeah.
So I've also made this like the fill-in game. Now this comes with me everywhere. This is my fill-in game.
Yeah.
And with the app scoring, which is free, like bravo. Way to go, WizKids. Like you nailed it. Now I will say there's multiple versions of this out there. And there's a new version coming out next year, Fantasy Realms Greek Legends coming out next year.
Ooh.
The artwork looks a little better, a little more on the cartoony side, but I think it's cleaner. And the graphic design is definitely better, significantly better. So if you don't have this, you certainly could pick up the Star Trek version missions, but it's the artwork is a little more weird and the graphic, you know, the graphic design is out there. So I can't really recommend it. There's a Marvel version of it, Marvel Remix, is also kind of, again, it's fine, but it's also kind of, I think they nailed it with this Greek Legends. I'm only seeing a couple of pictures, so I can't speak to the whole game, but it looks cleaner, and I think this is better.
Yeah. Yeah, even just the deluxe edition, which came out like last year, the year before, mm-hmm. they redid the artwork in that, and it's better, right? Like, it's the art covers the whole card. It's a little more uniform. That first edition was super rough, like you said.
Yeah, take a look at the Greek Legends version. That's one I would steer people towards when it comes out next year. All right, so let's take a look here. What do I want to throw after that? let's go, I guess, somewhat old school. The Palaces of Carrara, 2012. Now, again, there's been a new, I think, Kickstarter or crowdfunding version of this, which I was like, yay, because I think I remember telling how much Anthony, I love this game.
Right.
And I think that this is also on Board Game Arena, or if we...
Yeah, right? I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I like this game so much when I first played it. I purchased a German version, because they didn't have the version in America yet. So you had to kind of slip in the little English translations for the cards. But now they have a new version of it. It's clean, it's beautiful, it's streamlined, it's a little more expensive, but obviously you get the best version that's out there. So the Palaces of Carrara, it's all about this famous region in Italy where you're trying to buy, materials for buildings, obviously beautiful materials for beautiful buildings, trying to get them at a lucrative price as cheap as possible, and the market changes throughout. And that's one of the really interesting, beautiful pieces of the game, because it's, again, right there in front of you. You have the different regions that you're trying to build up. You have the different cubes on this little market board. And the market board, spins as the time goes by, different rounds go by. And everything gets cheaper if you're not picking those things. So that's pretty lovely and interesting and streamlined. And then they have the actual buildings itself that you're trying to build that are going to give you special tokens and abilities for scoring opportunities. It's just happens to be one of those games that is beautifully streamlined. And again, this is Michael Kiesling and Wolfgang Kramer, powerhouse here throughout. So again, it's a nice entry level for gamers to play games together. Because again, everything's on the board, streamlined, simple, clean, beautiful artwork, graphic design. A lovely little game. The Palaces of Carrara.
Yeah, this is a good one. I think I have a copy, actually. I think I got it on sale at some point. It's in the basement. But it's a cute and clever little game. I guess I thought it'd be a little bit more to it than it is. But that doesn't make it a bad game. It just makes it something a little bit lighter that doesn't come out as often. So yeah, I definitely could see why you like it so much.
Yeah, it's a 2012 game. So it's way back then where things weren't as... the crunch wasn't as smooth as it is now.
All right, next up for me, I got number 66. This is a Freeman Freeze game, which I like most of Freeman Freeze's games, but they're often like really cool, clever experiments that don't quite come together fully, at least for me. And so Power Grid hasn't been on my list for a while just because it doesn't get played, and a lot of the other games don't really make it, but this one, Fayum, I took to it. We played this for the first time back in 2021 at PAX. You and I, actually.
We did.
Our friend Andrew. And it was interesting, right? It's got it's got a Concordia-style mechanic, right, where you're, like, building a hand of cards or a deck of cards that you're going to play from. But then once you play them, they go in a certain order, and that's how you add them back to your hand, right, is the order in which you play them down. So the very first card you play, maybe you won't get back. So you want to make sure you save the better cards for a little bit later so you can pull those back up in the order you want them. It does have a weird fascination with getting rid of crocodiles. like the board starts covered in crocodiles. You have to clear them out to be able to build things and kind of interact with the rest of the space. It creates a really interesting puzzle, especially as you try to build the actual locations and spread onto the map. And the solo version of this is really interesting because of that, because it has that built-in puzzle and the puzzle of the cards themselves. There's an expansion for this as well, the Privileges expansion, which is not required necessarily. It's a small box expansion, but it does add some more interesting cards and, again, more difficult decisions, which are always... Anytime you have a decision that's like, how do I do this in a way that's going to benefit me without hurting me? And you have to try to figure that out. That's always interesting in a game for me. So Fayum takes a bunch of different mechanics, kind of mushes them together. It's got some like root buildings type stuff, like a few of his other games. It's got the Concordia style, you know, hand management element, but with like a weird twist to it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So that's Fayum.
It's a weird little game.
Yeah.
And
it's super weird.
When you
see it, freeze. It's weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And when you see, I mean, especially like you look at the cover of the box, you're like, oh, this is kind of interesting. This, and you see the game on the table, you're like, huh?
It's a lot of crocodiles.
It's like crocodiles on my roads. What's going on here? And I'm making like weird geometric shaped buildings.
Yep. Yep.
Just like, and there's red circles because red circles for some reason. So, yeah, this is certainly, it's a very, and I don't mean like, again, it's not a bad, it's like one of those kind of peculiar games that like, if you haven't played it, you're never going to get it. So I wouldn't even recommend looking at the BGG site. I would recommend finding someone who has this and then just play it. Cause I think it's the play experience that really kind of gets you. Everything else is just like weird. Huh? And then like you play it. So
yeah. The visual elements are definitely very old school.
Yes.
Like it's not, they're not trying to make it pretty or new. It's like, for people who just got into gaming in the last 5 years, you would look at this and be like, what is this? What are we doing? But the benefit, the good things here are in the mechanics. Like, that's what I'm mostly focused in on. And it's just like fantastic deck building mechanic, really interesting market mechanic. The board is like, how you interact with the board is really interesting and cool. Does it all make sense visually, abstractly? Maybe not. But I do like the rest of it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, it's weird that it's a 2020 release.
Yeah.
And from the looks of it, you would never think that.
No, it looks like a game that came out in like 2003.
100%.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. A fun little one, Anthony, I think that you both of us have enjoyed it. I remember playing this online with you during the lockdown here. Aquasphere.
Yeah.
2014. This is our good best friend in the world, Stefan Feld. And this is, I've always loved Feld's games because they're so uniquely distinct from each other. Mm-hmm. And you never know what Feld's going to throw at you. Uwe Rosenberg, you have a general idea, right? It's going to be farming or polyomino does a thing. And Feld was always like, random thing.
Yeah. Whatever he saw out the window that day.
Weirdly enough, you know, he just, it's such an oddity, to, so to speak. So Aquasphere, you're in the depths of the ocean and you're trying to explore and you have a research station and you have engineers, you have scientists, you have robots and you're, of course, submarines throughout. And basically the gameplay is so interesting because there's programming elements that go along in the game, but primarily you're trying to get area, you know, majority for influence, and you're dealing with movement throughout the game. And what you're really building throughout the game is you're building your own particular tableau of special abilities, your own little bathysphere, so to speak. It's colorful, it's bright, it's fun, and it has a lot of different ways to upgrade your particular, I guess, scientific lab throughout. And it's a Feld, so it's really a fun and interesting game. And it's got this modular element to it, so every game is kind of different, and how you build your bathysphere is different with your special bonuses throughout. So classic Feld, classic fun. I like it. It's Aquasphere.
I like it as well, quite a bit. This was like on my short list to make the list. I famously had a collection of all the Stefan Feld games. I had tracked down even the rare ones, even the like the weird German soccer one. And
yes,
then they ruined that for me with the City Collection.
Yes, they did.
And so I started getting rid of the ones that I don't really play or not like as much.
Mm-hmm.
And this one never made it even onto the maybe list.
Like, oh.
It stayed on the shelf. I love this one. I don't have as many Stefan Feld games in my top 100 because they don't get as much play as I would like. I have not been in a game group basically since I was living in Staten Island.
Sure.
That liked Stefan Feld games as much as I do. But this is definitely a game like I would love to play more. It's so clever. It's interesting, and it's the least, not the least, I think Oracle of Delphi is the least,
oh,
but
sure,
one of the least like point salad-y of his games, which is great.
Yeah, I think if you ask people name Stefan Feld games, they would never think to mention Aquasphere. You're like, that's one of the best. And they're like, really? I don't remember that. Like, yes, you do. Do you
remember? It was like a random Kickstarter from 2013. Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Do you want to mention the rare, I won't say rare, I hate to say, I wish it was rare. When I mentioned the weird production issue when we played it online.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, with
the red lines.
Yeah, like the boards were different. Like the score track, right?
It was when certain things triggered.
Yeah.
So the red lines were at different spots for you and I. I guess if we had different production years for the game.
Yeah. I had the first edition off the Kickstarter. I think you got yours retail. Mm-hmm. So they fixed it. I never knew mine was busted. So
we're like, the red line's here. No, the red line's here. It's here. What are you looking at? It's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like holding it up to the camera. Look, here. My wife looks through the door. She's like, what are you doing? Don't ask.
This is where the red line is. Here or no further.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially back in the day where games had a lot of kind of production issues here and there. That was kind of an odd one, to say the least.
Yeah, it was weird. Mm-hmm. It's one you would never know.
No.
So why would you know that? All right, cool. Great game. Good pick.
Mm-hmm.
Next up for me, I have at number 65, Zulkin, the Mayan calendar.
Oh, I've heard this one on a previous list.
It's come up before. So this one is another Simone Luciani and Daniela Ticini game. Second on my list this week. So I guess I'm bunching these together accidentally. I love this game for a lot of reasons. I think it's one of the best worker placement games because it's not really worker placement, right?
Yeah.
It's almost worker programming displacement.
Yes.
Like how you manipulate those wheels is going to determine how well you do. And it's, again, it falls into that category, kind of like Council of Four, where if you have not played this game before, it's very difficult to see what you're supposed to do.
Sure.
Right? Unless you're like really good at math and you can kind of count it all up. You have to see it play out. You have to see the flow of the game. You have to understand like how many workers am I putting out? When am I pulling them back? What order do I want to put them out? Like that stuff doesn't really click until you've seen it done a couple times.
Yes.
So first play is not always great. but that's the kind of game I like most. So like it's got emergent complexity that kind of builds over the course mm-hmm. of multiple plays. And it just really does that really fantastically. And the way the technologies integrate into the game and the way you're trying to complete these different contracts based on like these six different things you're keeping track of, all just very, very clever. It's still hard to believe this is the first game they worked on together, right?
That is crazy.
They hit it out of the park on day one, and they have a lot of very good games together that they've done over the years. But this is still like one of the best that you've done together, and it's so well realized. The expansion, very good. Not required, but it kind of throws in those asymmetrical powers, which always make a Euro more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Up front, the tribes and prophecies.
Yes.
So, yeah, Zulkin, the Mayan calendar. This is, I think, the oldest game on my list for this week.
Oh, wow.
From 2012. And it's one of those games, like, when I got into the hobby in 2013, I heard about.
Yes.
And then was intimidated by it for a little bit. And then the first time I played it, I understood why I was intimidated because I didn't get it. But once it clicks in, it's like, okay, I get it. And everything moves here. And then this moves here. Then that moves this. And someday I'm going to paint this wheel. Like, it's on my list of things to do.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I really want a pretty wheel. I haven't done it yet.
I think that's one of the most iconic things in tabletop gaming is all the people who paint their wheels beautiful, gorgeous colors reflecting
so pretty.
The Aztecs. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. And maybe that's part of why I haven't done it, because I see how pretty some of those are. I'm like,
gorgeous.
I don't want to ruin it.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it gives you a different... I'm trying really hard. When you play tabletop games, right? A lot of people who are either outside of like being hardcore tabletop gamers, or people who just like duck in and duck out, or have a couple of games, they don't understand that there are certain games that do give you such a different fundamental experience. And this is one of those games. The mm-hmm. displacement element, the press your luck mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. when you're going to pull something, and then if someone's ahead of you, like, are they going to pull that thing that you want before you get to it? And right. then you're running out of workers because you're waiting for them to get off the wheel. Just
right. Is someone going to move that wheel an extra location?
Yes.
And then everything kind of gets bumped forward.
100%.
Skip the spot I needed. No.
It is a completely different type of sweat than almost any other game. Like, it really is its own genre in and of itself.
Yeah. And I don't think I've ever played anything like it.
I know.
Even years later, even with the fact that the game has quote unquote been solved, like,
sure.
Like, nope. There's nothing I've played that gives me the same feeling as this game, even sure. all these years later.
100%. All right. Well, I'm going to do you one the same here, Anthony. You mentioned one that I had previously mentioned. I think it was that last week. I'm going to mention one you mentioned too. This is my number 65, Australia. With
a
Z.
Here it is. Yeah. gotta throw the Z in because that makes no sense.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing Australia.
Australia.
it's in Elder God speak. I think you have to have multiple tongues or no tongue to be able to.
Oh, you gotta hiss it. Okay.
You do. I think it's something like that. I can't add much more than Anthony already added. This is a Martin Wallace game, and the artist James Colmer did something that does not make any kind of sense whatsoever, should not work whatsoever. If you've heard my original review or Anthony's original review, or the fact that it's on both of our lists for the top 100 game, I implore you to try this game, because I get it. It doesn't make any kind of sense. What's going on here? Why is this happening? Yes. Yes. There is a war game in here. There is a network route building game in here. There's a Cthulhu game in here. There's semi-cooperative gameplay in here. None of this makes any sense whatsoever. Again, it does Cthulhu proud, right? It is a madness here. And each of the elements plays out fully in a real way. None of them is kind of like, oh, we just did a little bit of this for the fun of it. Like, you are building significant route building in this game. It has all the hexes there. You are picking a military, you know, action team to go in to fight the Elder Gods. And, you know, depending on what light or heavy military and cavalry you put in and what tanks and planes and all this other kind of stuff, it matters. It matters. You have to do the war element things, like mine hits this, you know, this light material, this heavy material, like, and it's a Euro game on top of it. Like, I don't know. Like, why? Like, that is Cthulhu in here? Why is Cthulhu in here? Should not work. Does not need to work. Can't work. It does work. It's Martin Wallace. Why is Martin Wallace doing this game? Martin Wallace should never do this kind of game. And he did this kind of game. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I'll have a little 18XX in my Cthulhu game. Sure, why not? It's the only thing 18XX hasn't done at this point.
Right.
Australia 2018. They did a Kickstarter with expansions and stuff. You could pick this up if you could find it out there. Does not make sense. You do need to play it, though. You do need to play it.
I think we found the theme for your list this week.
Is it?
What is this? What is going on?
Why?
Here? What is this? Why?
Well, that was, again, that was Fantasy Realms on your list too. But it's the vibe for this week, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know where this came from, but sure. All right. Yeah, Australia. I talked about this last week. It's a fantastic game. But also, yeah, same thing. Like, how does this work? Why does this work? This should not work.
No one should have greenlit this.
No. It's Martin Wallace, though. He's got, like, the blank check money, right?
I guess so. I mean, this is Stronghold Games. Like, Stephen Bonacourt usually is kind of straight down the line, but I give him credit for going along with this.
Yeah, I know. Martin Wallace shows up to a meeting. He's like, I have a game. Like, cool. We love games. It takes place in Australia. Okay, interesting. That's nice. It's like 100 years ago, so World War II era. Okay, cool. I love that. That's like different, not in the main theaters of war.
Yeah.
It's Cthulhu. Like,
what?
Okay. How do those go together? Like, they don't, but then they do. Okay, Mr. Wallace. Yeah, we'll get back to
sure,
you.
Sure, sure, sure. Just write the man a check and let him, you know, rock himself to sleep in a corner. It's fine. It's fine.
Someone's texting his family, like, you need to check on Mr. Wallace.
maybe it was a dare. Like, he'd just go into the office and be like, just pitch the craziest thing you could ever think of. And they'd be like, you know, we'll give you some money.
Yeah. And then they say yes. And he's like, crap, I have to make
this. I have to make this now. Get me a war gamer. Get me an 18 double Xer and a Euro gamer. Stat.
And find that weird Cthulhu guy at the comic book store.
Oh, my God. The weird Cthulhu guy on top of everything else.
All righty. That's a good game. Next up for me, I have one that it's not even a why. This is a thank goodness it's finally here type of thing. Sky Mines at number 64. Now, Sky Mines came out in 2022. It's from Alexander Pfister. Design credit also goes to Victor Kobylke. This is just a reimplementation of Mombasa. And it is, if you play just the base game on the base map without all the kind of tweaks and upgrades and solo stuff, it is just that. It is Mombasa in space, which we kept saying for years needs to exist. And then they finally did it.
They did. Because, they listened.
Yeah, because the formula, the game mechanics of Mombasa, really good. Historically, that game has been on both of our lists before we thought about it for a minute and said, actually, no, I don't want this on my list because it is a problematic game in many ways. Sky Mines takes, we remove the scramble for Africa. We don't have a bunch of European companies like extracting all the resources out of Africa. and they put it on the moon where nobody lives. So
it's fine now.
It's fine now, right? We're pulling helium out of the rocks. It's whatever.
And it's a board game, so nobody cares. So what?
No, it doesn't matter. The basic idea of the game, though, is that there are multiple different companies that are here extracting resources from the moon, right? You are effectively trying to build up influence with these different companies. Like, you don't own the companies necessarily. You're going to the moon, you're doing things there, and you're building up the stock or the investment in those companies. That's going to determine your score. You are doing stuff on the map to do that, though. It is not like an 18XX game where you're like just manipulating money and moving up a track. It is a legit Euro board game. It's just you are not owning the things that own the money.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the main issue that a lot of people had with Mombasa is that you had these companies that were pulling resources out, and then you were trying to scramble in there to get the resources and work with, you know, get the most value from the company itself. It was just weird and gross. So now it's the future. We're mining the moon. We're mining asteroids. We're using Cryptcoin because somebody thought crypto was a good way to go, but whatever. Sure. and it is just that core element of Mombasa where you have like the program, but the cards that you play, and then they go into the stacks based on what's been played, and you can only pull one of those stacks back on your turn. So cards that you play, some of them won't be available for a little while, and you kind of have to plan out the order in which you're going to play them and what stacks are going to go into so that you can pull back the stack that you want in the future for your hand that is going to have the most valuable combination of cards. And I always thought that was the most interesting, unique mechanic for a game. And I'm glad it's back because this game is great. I wish I had played this more since it came out.
Sure.
I played it a few times. I obviously played Mombasa in the past and enjoyed, again, mechanically enjoyed that. I don't know that they put a lot of push behind this when it came out.
They did not.
They're like, hey, we did it. Shut up and leave us alone.
Alexander Pfister.
Yeah. And now he's back in the Caribbean making more Maracaibo games. You're like, come on, man. You almost pulled it off.
That's right.
So it's great though. You should track it down. It's still available. It's still a normal price game. It is one of the best mechanical games, period. Euro wise. It's one of Pfister's best games. And it's just it didn't get that push, it didn't get that promotion. And nobody really reviewed it at all because they'd all reviewed Mombasa 5 years earlier. and or 8 years earlier, and they said, yeah, it's that. I'm like, it is that, and that was really good, and now it's less problematic from a thematic standpoint, and it has more elements in the game, has a solo mode, has another map, like, there's more stuff you can do as well. So, yeah, Sky Mines is great, and it's just a very clever, one of Pfister's, I think, most interesting designs.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things, especially nowadays, more than ever, is the industry is really fickle. Mm-hmm. And they used to talk about how a game has 6 months to kind of make its bones, right? So if it's out there 6 months and it hasn't really hit, it's never going to hit because there's so many other things coming out there. And they're always talking about shelf space, but honestly, it's not a shelf space issue. It's just, it really needs that kind of, honestly, like independent reviews to kind of go, look, we played this. Let's tell you how much fun and engaging, interesting moments that there are at the table. And since Mombasa had been out previously, I think certainly a lot of, if not almost everybody, kind of passed on this. I think the one review that I saw from like a legitimate outfit completely glossed over the fact that they made this version of it because there was a significant problematic issue to this game. This designer had several games that had this colonization issue with a lot of his games and just like did not care and just leaned into it a little bit hard, despite being a, as you mentioned, like an incredibly brilliant mechanical game. So when this came out, we celebrated it and celebrated the designer for correcting and, you know, utilizing his great talent in a better way to kind of, again, make everyone want to be at the table. And because other people did not celebrate, which they should have, it just did not get, it just, no one knows about it. So it's out there. You probably go, Sky Mines? I don't think. But you do know it from us. And I'm really glad that you put this on your list because I think people do need to know it, do need to play it, because the wonderfulness of like constructing your actions for the next round, because mm-hmm. throughout the game you've been building future rounds, is such a wonderful, smart idea. And I am not at all, and again, I still have not played an 18XX game, but math, right? Like percentiles and stuff like that. I love this game, right? Like it's really, and it's so good that it's out there. Please take a look at it. The graphic design, it's a little colorful. Like everyone who does space these days, like go over the top with like, there's still color in space. I'm like, yes, we know.
Yeah.
But again, great mechanical game. Please check it out. It's deserving of so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's one that, like, I was very happy to be able to bring it back and put it back on my list and play it more.
Mm-hmm.
And now I get to bring it into my classroom and be like, this is what you don't do.
Sure.
And here's how you fix it. It's such a juxtaposition just to show, like, here's the maps. Look at the decisions that they made rhetorically. Interesting, yes? Yeah.
And it is. And I think for a lot of people, like we were talking earlier about some of the reviews, this is the stuff that we celebrate. We're not here to bash. We're not here to cancel. We're not here to, you know, do anything bad to anybody out there. We're here to encourage, support, and enlighten. And that brings more people to the table. So when you're out there gaming, there's more gamers out there. And that's wonderful. And also, again, from doing the board game academic stuff, we well know that these games do have influence on society and in the world. And, you know, and they do reflect the world in a lot of ways, too. So mm-hmm. it's awesome stuff. All right. Next game for me here is not controversial anyway. I mean, people love it. I think the only controversial element to it is that people spend sometimes double the price of the base game to get the upgrade components. This is the Quacks of Quedlinburg from 2018. I had the opportunity to play a early prototype version of this. I went to a game convention. There was two publishers at the table. They were like, hey, we have this game. Would you want to play it? And I'm like, all right, sure, why not? And then, and they had, I'm trying to remember what country it was from, but it wasn't Quacks of Quedlinburg. It had the other country's name on it. And I was like, sure, we'll try this out. And it, again, has become, in, you know, most circles or some circles, or at least, you know, mainstream, the quintessential kind of press your luck game. Mm-hmm. Basically, you're one of these charlatans out there. You're a quack. And you're trying to put together these potions to sell to the public. and you're using all these weird, odd ingredients. So what's really fun and fascinating about the game is you're building a strategy around which elements do you want to kind of put into your bag to allow you to create the most points possible. Each of the elements give you a special ability to modify your bag or modify the placement of the elements or protect you from your potion exploding from all those different cherry bombs in there. And there's a lot of different interactive elements. It's had multiple expansions now at this point. It's had a super big box version. I've enjoyed them all. They've been great. The Quacks of Quedlinburg.
It's just such a fun game. Like, it's, I always, when it first came out, I was like, this is silly looking. like, thematically, the name, like, I'm not a big Press Your Luck guy. Like, the bag building, like, all that stuff. I'm like, I don't know. But when you actually play the game, it just, everything about it works really well.
Sure.
And it's clever and interesting. And it has enough depth to it that you can play with anybody, but it works with kids too, which I think is great.
Yeah. Wolfgang Wersch knows his kind of like grab you right from the start kind of action. And the fact that people have like gone to Board Game Geek and other places and just eaten up all those extra kind of super deluxe components just goes to show the fact that like people want to invest in this game, that it does get play time. A lot of people do play at the table.
Yeah, for sure. Alrighty. Next up for me, number 63 is Dorf Romantik. This is the 2023 Spiel des Jahres winner. Came out the year before. And I actually played this before it made a lot of buzz. Not because I'm a cool hipster or anything, but because
you are a cool hipster.
I am a cool hipster. No, it's because I played the video game a bunch, right? It's a Steam game that you could, it's been out for a few years. And I played it a fair amount because it is a very board game-ish game, right? It is, you draw a tile, you place it in a map. And the video game even feels like, if you played the video game now after playing the board game, you would think it's an a digital implementation of this game because of like how much it leans into tabletop tropes and styles and presentation. So I remember playing that. I'm like, this is really fun. They should make a board game. And then they did. So
you did say that. I do remember you saying that.
Yeah, it's good. I think I even reviewed the video game, I feel like, back in the day.
And it,
this would be a good board game.
And it did win a little bit of a Spiel des Jahres award.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. Mm-hmm. It was last year's winner. Mm-hmm. So this is, and we talked about this when we talked about converting video games into board games.
Yes.
They made it a co-op. The video game is very much like a single player experience. So how do you turn that into a board game? Well, you have already worked together. There's a single objective still, but now we're working together in tandem. Which does a couple things. One, it creates kind of a narrative opportunity because it is a campaign game as well, where you can build up and you unlock new things over the course of the game. Two, it makes it super family friendly because it is a big complex puzzle. And if everybody had their own map, not only would it take up way too much space, but it would be difficult to play with your kids, right? Because the kids would struggle to kind of make all those combos, whereas you'd be able to do that a little bit better. So I really enjoy Dorf Romantik, the board game. I'm excited for the new version. I think it's in Japan, the theming that they're doing. And I'd love for them to just keep doing that, like different actual locations. Mm. This is more of like a very generic Western medieval setting. Not even medieval, like Renaissance era setting. Farms and stuff. So mix that up, have different settings, different ways to play the game, different maps or however you want to do that, different campaigns. Very cool way to kind of build it out, keep growing the game. It's such a quick, fun, easy puzzle. It scales really well, plays extremely well with kids. It's a great solo experience as well. There's like everything it's trying to do, it does really effectively.
Mm.
If you don't want any of those things, then the game's not for you. But if you are looking for any of those things, Dorf Romantik is fantastic. And it's just, I would say it doesn't have a right to work because it's coming from a video game,
sure.
But that video game was already so close to a tabletop experience. They just found a good way to convert it to cardboard, and the result won the Spiel des Jahres. So obviously they figured it out.
True. Yeah. The Japanese version, Dorf Romantik Sakura.
Yeah.
And that's true. Coming out supposedly this year.
Yeah. I think it's an Essen release. So okay. It'll be out in it's Pegasus Spiel, the publisher, so
yes.
Probably we're not going to get it here in the U.S. till next year.
Ooh.
Those games often take a little bit of time to get over here, but it will exist in the world soon. So
unfortunately, I haven't played the video game or the board game, so I don't know.
Get on it, man.
I don't know anyone who has it.
Not nobody?
I know you.
No early adopters who had it like as soon as it was available.
Well, you were ahead of the curve. 100%. You nailed it way, way in advance. So I'm glad everyone's catching up.
Yeah, yeah. They caught up a year ago, but we'll keep letting them know.
There you go. All right. So let's go with something, you mentioned video game stuff. So let's go IP. You know, every once in a while we duck back to IP. This is Star Wars, the deck building game that came out in 2023. Not to be confused with Star Wars, anything else like Star Wars Unlimited that also came out relatively the same time, like a little bit later. Star Wars, a deck building game. It's Rebels versus the Empire. You know Star Wars. I don't have to explain Star Wars, right? It's a thing.
What's Star Wars, Chris?
I don't know. All right.
Don't do it.
A long time ago, Galaxy Far, right? Rest in peace, James Earl Jones. If you're a Star Wars fan, you love Star Wars stuff, right? Pretty straightforward, simple. This is the classic trilogy that's in play. If you're not a big Star Wars fan, why would you be interested in the next minute that I'm talking about this? Well, it's one of the best two-player games at the table. And basically, what it utilizes is your traditional card drafting mechanic as far as, like, you're playing cards to your own particular tableau to be able to gain resources to pull cards from the market. And you're also utilizing attack to attack the other enemy, whether it's their starships or their base of operations, which really is your intended goal. So you've certainly have seen this previously in Star Realms. What's great about this is it's a lot more sleek, a lot more streamlined, and it also allows you to manipulate the main market because you're only going to be able to draw from your particular faction, but you'll be able to attack the market and score points and resources that go throughout. And then there's also neutral factions that you could pick up throughout the way. I really enjoyed this from the very start. I thought that I would never see another Star Wars game that I would enjoy, especially from Fantasy Flight, which was known to do all the great ones. Small box, relatively inexpensive. Now they have a new version. If you like the Clone Wars stuff, that's now out. Star Wars Deck Building Game, a great little two-player game.
I agree. So much so that I will talk about it in the future.
What?
I know.
Do you do remember I was very excited to tell you about this game and play it with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we played it on my birthday.
I know. It was a good game.
Yeah. And then I bought it, and I played it many, many times with my son, and then he decided he was bored, but I still love it.
There you go.
All right, next up for me is a bit of a cheat, number 62, The Battle of Five Armies.
What? Now,
if you remember back to episode 490, we famously retired 10 games from our top 100 lists, and one of those games was War of the Ring, which was my number one game every time we did this list, going back, well, since we started.
Yes.
So. It has never not been my number one, and it is, it's my favorite gaming experience. The Battle of Five Armies is the sequel to that game. It came out in 2014, and I think it made my list maybe a couple times early on before I'd played more stuff, and then eventually it kind of fell off because I'm like, well, War of the Rings there, I don't need Battle of Five Armies. But the Battle of Five Armies is an amazing two-player experience, and one I kind of just wanted to talk about more, and I'm aiming to get to the table more, and the reason why it has a place, despite still owning War of the Ring, is that it narrows the scope a lot and it changes kind of the structure of the system, right? It's still designed by Roberto Di Miglio, Marco Maggi, and Francesco Nepitello. It's still using that base core, like, dice system that's in War of the Ring and Dune War for Arrakis. Like, it has a lot of similar mechanics and elements to it, but the map is much smaller, right? This is just the Battle of Five Armies from the end of The Hobbit. So you were basically at the bottom of the Lonely Mountain. That is it. And there's a lot more named characters. The armies are much more condensed. So even though you're doing a lot of the same stuff, it's much more tactical. Whereas War of the Ring is much more strategic, because even if you're playing the Shadows and you're trying to, like, just rush in and fight everything, you're trying to do it strategically to try to track down where the Fellowship is, find the ring, adjust the corruption, attack certain cities in different ways to put them under siege, to stop the units from moving out. This game is much more tactical in terms of like responding to what your opponents are doing with their armies specifically on the map. Like everything you're really doing is visible on the map in a way that is not the case in War of the Ring. The result is a game that is a little bit quicker to teach. Not a lot, but a little bit. It's definitely shorter most of the time. I know when it first came out, they pitched it as like, it's a shorter, more streamlined version of War of the Ring. It's not really. It's just a different take on that formula. But in my experience, it takes about an hour or so less to play. Like, it's not half the length, but instead of 4 hours, it's three. You know, in a really long game, might go a little long that. And it's more War of the Ring, right? It's the beautiful artwork that you get from that whole crew. It takes place in the same setting. And they had a beautiful collector's edition as well that I think is all sold out and expensive now. But even without that, it's just the production level that Ares Games does on their War of the Ring line of products is always so, other than the miniatures, which can be a little squishy, everything is just really solid. The artwork's amazing. Cards are really solid. The board is beautiful. Battle of Five Armies, like, if I can't quite get somebody to go in on War of the Ring, I'm like, well, what about Battle of Five Armies? Sure. It's like an hour or two shorter, and it's a little bit easier to learn. I'm like, okay, maybe. So yeah, there you go. Battle of Five Armies.
Yeah, this fantastic experience, different enough that you should own both games, and offers a really a lot of good interactive, solid, crunchy two-player gameplay. I did the technical thing, so War of the Ring, the second edition, is not on my list, and nor is the Battle of Five Armies, but certainly they would be, and they would be quite high.
Yeah, it's a different game, man.
It is.
We didn't have to remove it. We retired the other one.
It just felt weird for me. How can I have one and not the other?
Oh, yeah. But, yeah. I had to include
you, it. No, it's great that you included it, because I think just like we've talked about with several games, I guess if there is a vibe about this, like certain games that either should not work or certain games that have been overlooked, this game has been tremendously overlooked. So it does need the attention.
It really does. To the point where it's like out of print for like 5-6 years. Like it was really hard. I played it a whole bunch, I remember, back in like 2019. Because mm-hmm. several of my friends were like, wait, you have that really out of print War of the Ring games? I'm like, oh yeah. And then we played it a bunch because nobody could find a copy. Sure. And then they reprinted it and they did the collector's edition and everything. You can actually find it for a little while. But
that's true.
It's unique. It's funny because I was just looking at the Board Game Geek entry and they have this whole paragraph about how this is like the first entry in a line of games that would expand on different battles in the Middle Earth. And I was like, why didn't we get a Siege of Gondor game? Right. That didn't happen, but that's probably because this game didn't do very well financially.
Well, so. The movies too didn't help.
Yeah, that's true. That was at the time, 2014. That was not a great time for the IP. The Hobbit movies, not so great.
I would say that maybe the Amazon series could help, but I don't think that's helping.
No.
Although there's the anime feature that's coming relatively soon this year, right?
Christmas, yeah.
Yeah.
That might do it. I don't know. It looks good.
All right, I'm going to take it old school a little bit here, 2015. I'm going to talk about the second edition, but the first edition works just as well. This is Mission Red Planet. I think the first time I played this, I think it's with you, Anthony, and Daniel back in the day.
On the floor of his apartment, it's I recall.
True.
Yeah.
It's very true. This was a game that was also out of print. This was a Fantasy Flight game for quite some time, so this was a grail game for a lot of people. I remember we got a chance to play it. I think this was your copy.
Yeah,
Bruno Cathala, Bruno Faduti, the Bruno brothers. I mean, they're not brothers, but they could be because, again, first names.
They're Brunos.
They're Brunos, right? So we will talk about Bruno here. And what I like about this, when I got into tabletop gaming, I guess the game or the vibe that I brought over was Risk. Like, that was the old school classic game for me that stuck with me when I entered tabletop gaming. So when I first got involved in, like, classic or modern day tabletop gaming, I was looking for area control games. So Small World played really well with me, and Mission Red Planet was so interesting. It was a different take on that area control game, because playing these cards that were action cards allowed you to put out people on these, you know, again, I'll talk about the artwork and the theme a little bit later, but on these spaceships to travel to the Red Planet and also gives you, you know, special abilities. Sometimes it just more people, sometimes scatter your people amongst different spaceships that are taking off, because when a spaceship hits the number that's required, only then does it take off. But also allows you to sabotage a lot of stuff. So maybe you're blowing up ships, maybe you're sending ships to different locations, maybe you're taking out other players as they're trying to get onto the ships, maybe you're messing with the main board itself, and then you're collecting resources from the Red Planet here. And there's a lot of kind of interesting strategic play as you're building up for certain sections, and then there's like tactical ongoing backstabbing kind of movement on the Red Planet as you're trying to gain the most influence in particular areas. There's scoring cards that kind of influence where you're going to go and what you're going to do throughout. And again, the throwback here, the artwork here is wonderful. And it's that kind of super old school Victorian space era. So like what Victorians thought, like, I don't think that's like Victorian, but like the kind of like almost steampunk, very formal kind of looking, but going into space, like all of those old movies about space in a board game. Really enjoyed this game. Got to play it not too long ago, in fact. It really drew attention again. And the 2015 edition added some interesting new features and corrected some elements from the 2005 version. So really a big fan of it. That's Mission Red Planet.
Yeah, I really like that game. Like I think we picked it up at Gen Con, and it was a beautiful new production from Fantasy Flight.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever played it again after we played that on the floor of Daniel's apartment. It was a lot of fun. I thought it was a very interesting mechanic, just in terms of like how you interact with the planet, mm-hmm. but it just never got it back to my table. So I think I eventually passed the game along.
Oh,
but
no.
I would happily play it.
I still have a copy, so we're good to go.
Okay, good. As long as one of us has it. All right, number 61 for me, last one today, is, you mentioned this before, Star Wars Unlimited.
What?
Yeah, the new collectible card game for Star Wars. I like to always have some kind of collectible something, or some kind of card game, two-player card game here, that's expandable something. I retired Keyforge into the Hall of Fame a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. Because the competitive scene for that died, and the current publication strategy for that game isn't very good. It's all crowdfunded only, so nobody's really incentivized to go to local game stores. Star Wars Unlimited is not that. It's Fantasy Flight pretty much putting all the resources behind a collectible card game, and you'd be forgiven for being a little skeptical of Fantasy Flight being putting all the resources behind anything. But the game so far has been really, it rolled out really well. It had plenty of product. People could get what they wanted. They sold out of it, but like after a lot of people were able to get it. They had a new set come out relatively quickly after that over the summer. They've released like the next 5 set names, like through next year. We know what's coming, when it's coming. The open play events, everything's been really well, the organized play events have been really well attended. I can find them multiple places in my city. And on top of all that, the game's really good. Just from a game perspective, it is a well-structured 2-player card game, right? Where you have 2 different fronts that you're playing through. The resource mechanism is really interesting, where you are adding to your resource pool every round from your hand. It's optional, right? You don't have to do it. There are ways to jump ahead with the resource pool with different cards and abilities that you can put into your deck. Your leader card and how that can kind of enter the play midway through the game or towards the end, depending on how powerful they are. It's all really, it's streamlined. It feels very functional, but it's like, so you get all the options and the really interesting plays, and you can build a deck that does cool stuff, but it doesn't have all the bits and bobs kind of floating around on the outside like a lot of collectible card games do. Like, games are quick, they're efficient, and they feel like Star Wars, which is great. So I've really enjoyed it. I like the different take they did with the artwork, too. Fantasy Flight, for way too long, was basically using the same art assets for Star Wars. They all look the same. They're all very painterly. And this one, they went a little more cartoony, and some people don't love it, but I do. I like that stylized version of anything. Like, give me something that shows the artist's personality and how they're interpreting the world, and have it be a little more fun and interesting and different. Combined with those unique new mechanics, I think the game works extremely well. So it's It's been a favorite in my house. I've played it a lot with my son, and just the fact that I can get out and find other people in the community has been great too. The game hasn't been out that long. It just came out in March. So obviously there's a lot more time for it to grow, hopefully, and develop. And it doesn't do the usual Fantasy Flight thing and crash and burn after 2 years. But so far, so good. Star Wars Unlimited.
Very nice. And again, surprising in this day and age, what CCGs have been like, they're out there. There's so many of them. They've been around for quite some time now at this point. And you think you've seen it all. And it's not to say that this is, you know, breaks revolutionary kind of ground here, but it plays so well. And, you know, usually when you think you see these IPs coming out there, like, it doesn't need to. It just needs to be Star Wars and a CCG. Like, no, this plays really well. And I was glad when we had a chance to play it that I actually was able to play it. Like, the base box has a full game in it.
Yeah.
So they weren't trying to do what a lot of CCG companies do, which is like, hey, here's the base game. You need expansion packs to actually play this game.
Right. Or like, this deck technically works, but it's terrible and not very fun.
That's right.
You know? Yeah, those two starter decks,
mm-hmm.
among the best starter decks I've ever played in any CCG. Like, sure. They're really well structured. They're really well designed.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fact that, like, as generally a non-CCG player, like, I have, but as generally as not one, like, I could actually play this with the base game and have fun.
I think I played maybe 20 or 30 games just with the base stuff with my son before we bought any packs.
Mm.
Like, because it's some, and that's what you want. Like, Magic has kind of like gotten to that point, as is Pokemon, of where, like, you can just get decks and play at home with your family and not have to go spend $100. So you don't need to have all that extra stuff unless you want to do the deck building. And if you get to that point, that's fine as long as you've enjoyed that. You don't, like, the CCGs where they're like, no, you need to go buy the packs because the cards in the base pack are bad.
It's incomplete a lot of times, those decks, like you said, or it's a very weak, silly deck, and they're just like,
right,
oh, this will give you some elements of the game. Like, no, I bought the game.
Right.
I want to play a good version of this game. Like, if you want to sell me other stuff, that's fine, but, like, I want to feel like a full, rich game experience. And again, publishers need to know that, right? And designers need to know that. Like, my first play should be great because I'm right. not, there's too much out there. I don't have the time. I may not come back to this game, especially a CCG, if it's a thud.
Right. Like, too many of them are like, because there's two things, right? You have the players and you have the market.
Yes.
And if you build only for the market, then you don't have the players.
Mm-hmm.
And if you build only for the players, then you don't have the market.
It's true.
You got to, like, walk that line. And I get that. And that's fine. But, like, the One Piece CCG, that one came out like a year earlier. I really like One Piece. I thought it was an interesting game. The way that they sold those cards and the way they built the decks, it was not accessible, and the cards weren't great unless you bought the boosters. It was definitely built for the collectors. And I didn't get into it. Whereas this is really built for players first.
It's true.
And then the collectible element comes in through the boosters, and they've really managed, like, the amount of product in circulation pretty well so far. So it's good. I think they're doing a good job so far. I mean, knock on wood, because it's still Fantasy Flight and it's a collectible game,
mm-hmm.
but so far, so good.
All right. And my final game, my number 61 game, is not a small game, but it is Small City, a big box game from Albin Villard. Actually, the box is kind of big. Not so much all the stuff in the actual game itself. Kind of tricks you a little bit. You're like, it's small, but it's a big box, but there's not a lot of stuff inside, but it's okay. We've talked about this a lot. I'm okay with polyominoes. There are games that I do like that are polyomino based, and I will be talking about those later. Small City is one of those games. Like, I'm building a small city. I'm a mayor of I'm running for mayor of a small city, and I have to build up my city with all the infrastructure, all the buildings that everyone could possibly want, including jobs and industry. But yet at the same time, quality of living is essential, and pollution just wrecks the city. So what do you do? Well, here's a little strategy tip. You go send your workers to another person's city, you make pollution all there, and then you come home. So it has a really, again, when you see these kind of Euro games, you're like, oh, Albin Villard, it's going to be hard and heavy and complex, and it's going to be crunchy as all get out. And somehow it plays smoothly. It's very streamlined. You're choosing different actions each round, different people from the city government that can assist you throughout. And you do influence other people at the table. And a lot of times with Euro games, you don't get that in a real meaningful way, especially way back in 2015. I really enjoy this game. It was one of those games that it does seem like a lot at first, but once you get to play it and you start putting together that city, it does make a lot of thematic sense, and it's a lot of fun to get to the table. They did have a reprint of this recently. It was a crowdfunded one. I still do like the original, just the artwork a little bit better, because it plays into like that SimCity kind of like cartoony figures on the table. The new one's more modern version is still okay. It's a deluxified version, but primarily it's the artwork that's kind of different here. So Small City 2015 or the new deluxe edition 2023.
Yeah, I have the deluxe edition, and it's a little disappointing. It's a big upgrade in terms of components from the original version. Mm-hmm. Compared to the Clinic Deluxe Edition, it's a little disappointing, because that was like Ian O'Toole artwork, fantastic box, like all the components really solid. This one is like in between. Yes. It just feels like what you'd get from a modern release.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like a deluxe anything. I actually got to play this for the first time just recently.
Oh, really?
I've owned this game now for like a year and a half, 2 years, whenever it came in from the crowdfunding. I have all the expansions too, because that's what I do.
Nice.
And I finally got to play it because I like Album VR games. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I know I'll like this, and just never got to the table. And I had a lot of fun with it. I think it's a very clever way to kind of do the spin on SimCity type stuff. Like, you're building up the city and interacting with everything based on like what buildings you want to put out.
Yeah.
We also played with the Godzilla module from the Winter expansion.
Nice.
And so that was fun because Godzilla will stomp around and break your stuff, which is cool. In true Album VR form, there are like three big box expansions, each with like 5 to 10 modules. So there's 400 ways to play this game, apparently.
Oh boy.
But Godzilla's great.
Godzilla's always great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, if you're a publisher out there, and I know it's expensive, and I know he's expensive, but if you can go Ian O'Toole, go Ian O'Toole.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of great artists out there, and I've talked about them a lot, but man, just play it safe, Ian O'Toole.
I think this one was Moria too. It ended up being like, it's great artists, but like the end result is a little washed out because it is just a city. Like, how do you bring character to that? I'm sure Ian O'Toole would have figured it out, but
I mean, I like the original version because it does have a little more cartoony element, which is
right.
Does feel a little bit better when you're playing something that's polyomino based, where it's very grid kind of looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have a little fun in my crunch. Like, that's a crunchy game. That's not a light game.
Right. Yeah. And Alvin Viard's kind of a goofy guy. Like, you kind of want the game to be a little silly. Like,
that's true.
Clinic, Ian O'Toole found a way. Like, it is kind of goofy. The artwork's goofy. The people moving are like, what you're doing in that game is goofy. So you want the artwork to match.
All right, everyone. So there you go. The latest 10 for you, especially this week. It's our number 70, number 61. Next week, of course, big surprise here, number 60 to number 51.
We should just throw in a random episode like top 10 trick-taking games.
They'll be like, what? People would not be happy with that.
No. That'd be funny, though.
All right, everyone. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.